Be sure to check out our Cyber Monday sale. It is going all week long. It will end soon, but it's our best deals of the year at HartmanEducation.com. That's HartmanEducation.com, where all of our info products and educational products are half price for Cyber Monday, our best sale of the year. HartmanEducation.com.
I started investing in real estate to supplement our retirement for the cash flow process. I currently own 10 properties and an additional 10 with my husband, so 20 total. We found the Creating Wealth show through my husband going on the internet and looking around for something like this.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome and thank you for joining me, episode number 1092, and greetings from San Francisco, California, the very famous San Francisco. Yesterday, we went and looked at that incredibly iconic landmark, and that is, of course, the Golden Gate Bridge. Now, it's not like I haven't seen it a million times, been there before, I've been across it many times, but yesterday, just looking at that marvel of engineering that was actually originally conceived in, I think it was 1872, it opened in 1937 during the tail end of the Great Depression, but of course it's amazing, and probably all of you listening have visited the Golden Gate Bridge, and you know about it. It's certainly very iconic. It's appeared in so many movies and TV shows and so on and so forth. But, of course, we could talk about how it's 90 feet wide and 746 feet tall, and it's incredible how they constructed it and so on and so forth. But I think the biggest lesson for real estate investors from the Golden Gate Bridge is this, and it's not just a real estate investing lesson, it is a life lesson in general for all of us, and that is to be flexible, to be flexible. The Golden Gate Bridge has survived numerous earthquakes, it has survived wind. I don't know what the highest wind it survived. I can't remember, but I think 75, 80 mile an hour winds or something like that. No damage. The earthquakes, no problem for the Golden Gate Bridge. It's amazing because it's not what? It's not rigid. It is flexible. It bends with the wind. It has some flexibility to it. And as real estate investors, we constantly have to be flexible, right? Our environment, we need to adapt to it all the time because things are changing constantly. And nowadays, they are changing faster than ever. And we will be disappointed. We will have problems. We will have bumps in the road. All of these things come up. They come up all the time. And, you know, I just think the general lesson is be flexible. Go with the wind at times and be willing to change and use sensory acuity. Now, the concept of sensory acuity is a very important one, too. And you've probably heard this, that a pilot, I was just with my cousin who is a pilot for American Airlines. A pilot, any pilot will tell you that when the plane takes off and it leaves, say, San Francisco, right? It leaves San Francisco Airport and it flies to, for example, New York City. And it's flying to New York, and 99% of the time, as that plane is flying, even with all of the modern technology that we have available to us in terms of autopilot and GPS and so forth, don't quote me on the 99%. By the way, it's a kind of a figure of speech. I don't know the exact number. Probably pilots don't know either. But most of the time that that plane is in the air with all the modern technology, guess what? It's off course. It is off course most of the time. But all of those high-tech instruments give it sensory acuity. So it can constantly course correct, it can constantly adapt, and it can constantly get back on course. And that's life, isn't it? That's how life works, right? But it's also how building a great real estate portfolio works. Things will knock us off course constantly, constantly. And we can get really upset about it. We can be exasperated. We can complain like crazy. We can throw our arms up. We can quit. We can just give up. But that's not going to serve us, is it? What we need to do is constantly adapt and constantly push ourselves back on course. Push ourselves back on course all the time. You know, I think this kind of ties in. I am a student of Marcus Aurelius. He wrote this great book. I don't actually know if he wrote it, but, you know, the ancient Marcus Aurelius. Well, there's the book Marcus Aurelius Meditations, right? You may have read that. You may have heard about it. It's about Stoicism, this philosophy that has a lot of good points, a lot of things we can learn and use in daily life. And one of the concepts that I was reading about recently reminded me of Thanksgiving. And of course, I talk about this all the time. There's this one holiday every year, I just talked about that last week, where we really focus on being thankful. And I understand that we have a global audience. We have listeners in 165 countries. So maybe you don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Probably a lot of you listening don't. But you know what the holiday's about. And maybe you have another kind of holiday like that that reminds you to be thankful and grateful. And that is all very important. It is a huge key to success in life. But you know what nobody ever talks about? They don't talk about the flip side of that. And so I thought I'd just talk about that a little bit today before we get to our guest. And we're going to talk about, we've got Mitch Steven on today, an old friend of mine, great guy. We're going to talk about his real estate portfolio where he owned over 1,000 houses, if you can believe that. He's very big in the single family home industry. But in this episode today, we focused on self-storage and commercial properties. So you learn a little bit more about that, and it should be very helpful to you. But the flip side of this gratitude thing, you know, we've all heard a lot about toxic people and about how we shouldn't let people take advantage of us. Well, I think we also should be mindful of the gratitude perspective, not just from our own side of the equation, but from the flip side of that equation. And Jim Rohn quote, as I always talk about, your income will be the average of the five people you spend the most of your time with, right? Carmen was on the show recently and quoted Pitbull, right?
Yep.
And what was that quote? Do you remember?
Yes. Dime con quién andas y te diré quién eres.
See, we do this in Spanish too, folks. What does it mean, translate?
It means tell me who you hang out with and I'll tell you who you are.
There you go. So this is very important. Well, we have to really curate this, and that's one of the great things about a mastermind group. So don't hang out and don't allow toxic people to be in your life. Don't allow them to associate you, be in your business. If they are not grateful, now, of course, we need to be grateful and maintain an attitude of gratitude. But if other people in our lives are not grateful, it is very important that we get them out of our lives because they contaminate the space, right? And it's very important. You know, one of the things we need to do is try and keep our space clean, keep our mind clean, our mindset clean, because it's very hard if you have people that are constantly contaminating your space. If they are lying, if they are ungrateful, if they are toxic in whatever way, it's important to be a cleaner, okay? Clean the space and get them out of your life. So when I was thinking about Marcus Aurelius recently, I kind of thought of that and combining it with Thanksgiving and blending those concepts together, I thought it was kind of interesting. Okay, so before we get to our guest, I want to read to you a couple of sound bites, if you will, about the economy and about the housing market. And we're going to do something very different this time. Our host, yours truly, is going to shut up. He's not going to comment on this. I know you're all thinking, really? I think that Jason Hartman guy has an opinion about pretty much everything. Carmen is laughing here.
I don't think it's possible. We'll see what happens.
Okay, so I just want to read these to you without any commentary from me. And the reason I want to do this time this way, you know, I share these sound bites with you frequently. The reason I want to do it this way is because I want you to think about how conflicting so many of these things in the news sound and how conflicting this data sounds. In fact, I shouldn't even be commenting saying it's conflicting, right? But it is. So I will just read to you a couple of things and I'm going to take the fifth. I'm going to take the Fifth Amendment. I'm not going to comment. I am going to withhold my comments. And then we are going to get over to our guest for today and get on with the show. Okay, so here are some sound bites lacking my commentary. New home sales fell in October. However, data last week showed an increase in building activity. A larger supply of available homes could bring more sales. Oh, I got a comment. I can't resist. Okay, I'll shut up after this. But see how I told you that
I knew it wasn't possible.
I couldn't even get through one.
Not one.
I got a comment on this, folks. You need to hear what I'm going to say. It's so valuable. Remember how I told you that the sales activity, you know, when you hear sales are down, it's not necessarily the sign of the market cooling. It might be that the market is too hot because when there's no inventory to sell, and hey, this has been our problem for a couple of years now, it's been pretty tough. When there's a lack of inventory, by extension, there has to be a lack of sales. So sales volume can slow because the economy is slowing and people aren't buying. That's the normal thought, right? Hey, there's a recession. People aren't buying. They're scared to make decisions. So that's why sales are slow. But the other reason they're slow, the flip side of that one, is that you just don't have enough inventory to sell. If you want to sell the lemonade at your lemonade stand, you got to have some lemonade to sell. No matter how many customers you have, if you can't fill the demand, you're not going to have sales. Okay. I will refrain from commenting now, I promise.
And we'll see.
October's pending home sales dropped 2.6% from the previous month. Sales were down 6.7% compared with October of 2017 for the 10th month of annual declines. No comment. I'm dying to comment. I'm not going to. Despite moderation, September's annual home price gains remain strong at 5.5%, as reported by Case Shiller. I'd really love to comment about Case Shiller, but I'm not going to. You've already heard it. Okay. The economy grew at 3.5% in the third quarter, lower than the second quarter's 4.2% expansion. Still, corporate profits reached a six-year high. Consumer spending increased by the most in 7 months in October, but underlying price pressures slowed, meaning inflation is less of a concern. Recent comments by Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell have markets questioning if we'll see policy interest rate increases in 2019, which could be good for mortgage rates. All right, there you go. I only got one real comment in there, only one substantive comment in there. Before we get to our guest, look for an announcement real soon on our Meet the Masters of Income Property event, our big event coming up in Southern California in probably late February, early March. We spaced that one out again this year because we just finished our Profits in Paradise event and our Venture Alliance event in Hawaii. Also, Venture Alliance Cuba cruise or Cuba trip coming up, probably a cruise. We're working on that, so announcements coming there. By the way, the winners of our last contest, I hope you are enjoying your Alexa or Amazon Echo devices. We bought you the nicer one. I hope you appreciated that and noticed that. That wasn't the one we were planning to give away, but hey, we wanted to upgrade and we picked two winners rather than just one. So enjoy those devices. They really are cool. They do everything. Without further ado, let's get to our guest today, Mitch. Let's talk to an old friend of mine, and we will learn more about what he's done in the real estate investing world. Single-family homes, certainly he's been very big in that, over 1,000 properties, but also in the self-storage world. So here we go. Hey, It's my pleasure to welcome my friend Mitch Steven. This guy is amazing. He is into creative financing. He's into authorship. He writes music. I mean, what doesn't he do? I don't know. I don't know. But he's got some great books out there. He's author of My Life and 1,000 Houses and Falling Forward to Financial Freedom. Today, we're going to mostly focus on his self-storage business. I've always been intrigued by this asset class. Mitch, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good. And thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure. I haven't seen you in quite a while. I've been missing you.
Yeah. It's good to have you on. And you know, Mitch, I'll never forget that first time I met you. I was with another friend of mine. We were at a mastermind group. It was in Tampa, Florida. And I'll never remember the genius and the awe I learned from you as you were scribbling on the back of a napkin. Quite literally, you were doing the napkin presentation about financing. I'll just never forget. I bet I still have
that. Yeah, I like napkins. I made a lot of money with it.
I bet I have that napkin, actually. So, yeah, good stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I think I kept it. Yeah, I think I've got it somewhere. You've done a lot of stuff, and really just kudos to you on that. But your big thing nowadays seems to be self-storage, and you're doing a great job with that. I love the asset class. I've never been in it, only single family homes, apartments, and mobile home parks for me, you know, in the real estate world at least. But self-storage is pretty great, isn't it? I'll fire away a question for you right away. Is it overbuilt?
This is what happens is, though, you get older and you get lazier and you start to see what's easier.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, easier is good. Is self-storage overbuilt? I mean, people have been paying attention to this asset class for a long time. We've seen new facilities go up everywhere. Is there enough demand for all this supply?
Apparently there is. You know, it's very scientific. If you hire those consultant companies, if you're thinking about building one, mm-hmm. I think for about $5,000 you can get a pretty good consulting company to tell you. It's based on population and income and purchasing habits. And, you know, they'll tell you exactly how many square foot per person per population that there needs to be. And then they go around and they look and see how much of it there is. And they'll tell you if there's a shortage or an overabundance. So one of the good things about it is it's an easy business to run and it's not really rocket science. I say that, but you got to remember I'm doing the mom and pops. I went out rural where no one could tell me and I didn't have to make blueprints or plans. You know, I held my finger up to the air and I drew stuff on a napkin and I said, okay, I'm going to build this.
Right.
And I built a lot of my stuff in the beginning out in the country where all I needed was a septic tank permit, if there was even going to be a septic tank on there. And so I suppose it's a lot more sophisticated if you get these multi high rise things, but I've never done that, but I'd like to do it, but I haven't done it. So in my area in rural, you run the risk of it's all great. And then people start building around you and they ruin your market. So right. I try to find like at Canyon Lake, it's really hilly. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of flat spaces. So I try to buy a flat space or make a flat space where there is no flat space. So it's not very conducive for someone just to want to come in and put something up.
Right, right. So your way to try and maintain your market is not by the typical zoning restrictions that you'll have in a city in an urban environment where they won't let them build another one. Your way of doing it is to just look at the topography, look quite literally, and say, hey, you know, it's going to be really hard for my competitor to come in and build something here and take my customers away, right?
Right, because the topography. And so you'll spend a little money sometimes flattening something out or doing something, but most people don't have the nerve for that. You know what I mean?
So the other thing is, you're building from scratch though, always, or did you try and acquire first, or tell me what you do?
The first storages I ever had, I bought these little corrugated aluminum dirt floor fishing boats, 8x25x10 wide, and there was 13 units in front of this Comal Park at Canyon Lake, right in front of this state park. And they were just so cheap. They were like $6,000 and they were written for like $25 or $30 a piece. And I thought, well, that's a super ROI. And so I thought, well, I'll try it. And I started renting out those things. And then I liked it. And I went to the local realtor there and I said, how many of these mom and pop facilities are there around this lake? And I don't remember what he told me. It's like 30 or 40 of them or whatever. And I went and made 10 bundles of letters, and every bundle had a letter to every one of them. And every 6 months, I would drop the bundle at the post office and send it to all the owners saying, if you ever want to sell your place, I'd like to talk to you about buying it. And over, so it was 10 bundles. It was a bundle every 6 months. So I did it for 5 years. And I ended up buying 14 locations around the lake. I am CanyonLakeStorage.com.
That's pretty good. Now, Canyon Lake, are you talking California? Where are you talking about?
No, but I get calls from there all the time. And yeah. I've actually rented a few units only to find out that they're not going to show up.
Okay, yeah,
but
yeah.
But now I know to ask.
Okay, so Canyon Lake, what, in San Antonio area where you are?
Canyon Lake, Texas, right between San Antonio and Austin.
Okay, great. So you bought 14 facilities there, and what's your average size facility?
Well, they were tiny. You know, some of them only had 20 units. Some of them had 55 units. Some of them had, I was buying what I could afford to buy, you know, and whatever someone had for sale. Mm-hmm. Now, over the years, I've added on to the ones that had mega land or had enough land, and I've made them, you know, into 100 or 150 units. I've even combined them. I've even like grown some of the units together because they were contiguous. And then I sold off the tinier ones in the name of just consolidation, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you bought first and then you decided to build, right? Is that the way it went?
I bought and then I added on. Then I got to a point where I'm just buying the ground and building straight out of the ground brand new.
You know, I'll tell you something amazing. We were trying back in 2011. Now, we probably should have, in the rearview mirror, we should have bought everything we made a letter of intent on. But we were trying to buy self-storage facilities and mobile home parks back then, and ended up buying one mobile home park. But I was amazed. We looked at building, and we talked with one of the companies that provides the parts for self-storage facilities. They're like Erector sets. They go up so fast. They can build those things in like 4 days. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, like Legos.
Yeah, exactly. But interestingly, I remember the guy telling me that he had a client who was doing a facility in Northern California in the wine country area, and it took 4 years because of all the regulation and the red tape and the government.
Yeah, the union and everything else. You know what I mean?
California is impossible. It really is impossible to do anything there. But yeah, so, okay. So you found it was a good enough deal to build, huh? I mean, that wasn't cost prohibitive. It wasn't better to just buy an old facility that's pre-rented?
Well, it could have been. You know, I bought a lot of used facilities in my time. Used, secondhand, what do you want to call them? I just bought some facilities that were existing. But you know, how I got to all this was I was buying houses and flipping houses, and I was selling houses with owner financing. So I was doing about every strategy I could think of in the house flipping department. But one thing I figured out after reading like Jack Bosch's book was that I needed a forever stream of income. Mm-hmm. I personally, you know, didn't like to deal with the human factor as much, you know, like families and all that stuff. So I stumbled into this mini storage thing, and that's become my forever strategy. So I flip as much or owner finance as much as I can, and I take the wealth I make from that, and I put it into this forever strategy of storages. And that's how I got into it as deep as I did, because it's the last move in the chess game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got to get into something long-term, my money into something long-term.
So if someone wants to get started in self-storage, and I know, Mitch, that you offer coaching and things like that, and you help people do this stuff and tap into your vast experience in this, but just give us a little outline. Like if someone's listening and they say, hey, you know, I heard self-storage is great. It sounds even better now that Mitch is talking about it. What do they do? How do they start? Should they look for an existing property? Should they look for a site and look to build one?
You might go down to the city and find out what's being planned way out ahead. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where are the permits getting pulled? Where are the big subdivisions going? You know, if you can get out far enough ahead, the dirt's still cheap because everyone hadn't figured it out yet.
Right.
Figure out what the permits are. Start seeing if there's some, for lack of better words, some land, you know, some land that's not really good for anything else. It's a weird, kind of flag that, you know, it's just a road up front and it's a flag and you drive down the road and then it opens up in the back. Find something that's not worth a lot. Even some places, you can buy floodplain and haul in enough dirt to pull it out of the floodplain. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Or something, but try to find the cheapest piece of dirt you can where the growth is headed.
In what's called the path of progress, right? The path of progress.
What I like to do is have a master plan and build a phase and then wait to see how long it takes to fill up and get comfortable with that phase, but also listen to what they tell you that they want. Like, are they asking for 10 by 20s? Or are they asking for 5 by 5s? I mean, in the phase 2, 3, and 4, you just build what they're asking you for.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. it's the common sense way instead of going out and paying the consultants to tell you what your unit mix ought to be, and kind of that gamble.
Right.
All at one time, it's like, let me just build 25% of this thing, and then let me see what the audience tells me.
Well, you know? That's a good philosophy. That's the iterative method, right? You just iterate and you keep making it better. And that's exactly what they do in the startup world, the Silicon Valley startup world. You know, the Lean Startup book is all about that. You do something, and what you're doing in self-storage is the same thing. You produce a minimum viable product, you put some units there, and then you listen and you monitor. And you use that feedback for your next phase. So that's a really good plan. That's great that you do that.
And I try to get economy of scale by just building around the lake where I live. It's a reasonably decent sized lake. So there's a lot of shoreline all the way around. So I wanted to have a presence. Like sometimes they call me and they go, well, I'm calling about your storage. I said, well, which one are you calling on? They say, this one over here. I said, well, where do you live? They say, well, I live over there. I said, well, no, you need the storage by the place I have over right next to your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
One reason I got out of small commercial was I didn't have enough presence to give myself any advantage, you know? Mm-hmm. So I sold my small commercial stuff and put it all into the storages, you know, because I wanted a place where I had some magnitude.
That magnitude and that presence can definitely provide some opportunities for you. No question. When you say small commercial, what does that mean? What property type?
For the last 10 years, I officed in a 12,700 square foot building that I occupied about 3,000 square feet in, and I was leasing out all the other Class B and C office space there, you know?
Yeah, okay. And yeah,
office, got in my way.
Office is a mess, isn't it? That's just too hard.
It got in my way. It was a pain in the ass.
See, you've got people doing tenant improvements, construction projects. It's just too hard, right?
Mine wasn't even that sophisticated. I opened up the door. If you didn't like it, you needed to find something else.
Well, I'll tell you, Mitch, now is the good time for me to tell you my revelation. And this was huge. And forgive me, because I'm probably not going to get the numbers exactly right, but they're going to be close. This was back in, I'm going to say this was 2010, okay? We had moved out of a big office in Orange County, California. And we moved to a smaller office. I was working over the course of years on virtualizing my company and making it more lean and mean, okay? And that was a very good decision in hindsight. But when we moved, we had a bunch of extra stuff, and I had to put it in storage. Now, we leased the office. I signed the lease on this office, and I think, I want to say, I paid like $2.75 a square foot for Class A office in Irvine, California. It was quite nice. It was a famous, iconic building there, as famous as they get in Irvine, but, you know, kind of iconic locally. And it was really neat, you know, restaurants, Class A, marble floors, all the great stuff, right? And then, so we signed that lease. They've got plush bathrooms, all this stuff, right? We signed that lease, and I thought, okay, we can't fit anything more in here. We got to get a storage unit. So right across the San Diego freeway, there's a storage facility. I go in and sign a lease on a storage space. The same week, I did both of these things, right?
Same price, $2.70 a foot.
It was like $2.60. The storage facility was like 15 cents a foot less, I think.
It had nothing in it.
And it had nothing. It didn't even have, I don't even know if there was a bathroom there, much less beautiful lobbies and marble and plant service and air conditioning.
No carpet.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I thought these guys and the self-storage are cleaning up. Well, these rich, institutional, sophisticated investors with the beautiful Class A office building are losing their shirts.
Hey, I never thought about it like that, but you're right.
You know? I couldn't believe it. And since then, I did try to buy some self-storage units, never got one though. But, you know, I want to talk to you about something else. So comment on that, please, if you would. But then don't let me forget, because I want to ask you, there's a lot of people out there that are turning these self-storage facilities into like fractional ownership, where you own a unit. And there are definitely some scams in that world. So, you know, be careful. But where you own like I guess it's a condo, essentially, right? Or what are they doing?
The storages, I've heard of it. I don't know that it'll fly out here in Texas yet, but maybe it's already being done in Texas. I just don't know. As a matter of fact, I was talking about that like 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that I haven't talked about it in years, and then I started talking about it 2 days ago. So maybe it's an omen. Maybe I need to fractionalize something.
Maybe. But, you know, you're not doing that then. You're just doing straight, simple rent, right?
I'm just renting it out. It's where I take my wealth so I can preserve it. You know, it's really cool because you got 1,300 units, right? Right now I have 13. I'm headed to 2,000. But, you know, you only have to – you just start – on January the 1st, you start working your way around, and you're increasing everybody $3.50. Of course, now when it gets to be summertime and it's 107 degrees here, then you can start increasing people by $5 because no one's moving out for $5 when it's 107.
Right, okay? Exactly.
So, but you should never have – you should never be full. That's one of the misnomers.
Yeah, I agree with that, by the way. In residential real estate or apartments, whatever it is, they say, oh, you know, I'm great. I'm a great investor because I have 100% occupancy. No, you're an idiot and you're not charging enough, right?
Right. Well, the other side in the storage is we struggle to have two of everything available all the time. If we get down to one 10 by 10, we start calling everybody in that facility that has a 10 by 10. I mean, not calling them, but we start sending them letters to raise the rent until somebody flips out. Because I got to have two at all times because I'm going to rent one. When I have one left, that's like the notice. You got to start raising all the 10 by 10s in here. Because if you say that you're full when you call, if you tell me that you're full when I call a storage place, and I call the next place and they say they're full, I'm looking for dirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Makes sense. Are you automating your facilities at all, Mitch? Like, do you have to have a lot of employees? I know you don't have to have a lot, but what's your structure as far as management? Some of these facilities are just automated now, right? You can sign up, get a lock and do the lease on an ATM, right?
I'm sure maybe someone's made it work or there's such a demand that they can find it work, but I'm kind of out here rural around the lake.
Uh-huh.
And that 70-year-old man pulls up on a storage, he ain't dealing with no kiosk. He's driving right the hell off. You know what
fair
I mean?
Fair enough.
And probably me too. I'm 57. And sometimes if that kiosk poses any problem to me, I'm pissing out of there. You know, I want to go someplace where there's some service, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we actually were doing that before the recession. We were taking great pride that people were calling us and we were giving them the unit number over the phone and they were moving in and they were picking up. We had a way for them to get a lock and do the whole thing. And they would mail them a contract and they'd sign it and send it back. But when the recession hit and it got tough, we just said, we're going to roll up our sleeves. We're going to meet everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute we started meeting everybody, we were filling up like crazy. I mean, like nobody left because if there was a problem, we could address their problem. If it was price, we could take a look at our inventory and even adjust the price right on the spot if we wanted to. We could make deals. We could make decisions. Otherwise, they go and they roll up the door and say, I thought a 10 by 10 would be bigger. I'm leaving. And they just leave and go someplace else.
Right, right. Well, the other thing is you learn a lot by talking to your customers too, right?
Right. I even learned something the other day. There's a guy in the storage business. And when he has people a couple of months behind, he just divides up the rent and gives them a second chance. Like if they owed $100 a month and they're a month behind, he'll just start charging them $120 and let them make it up, you know?
Yeah. Well, in the long term, he probably does better with that actually because he increases his coupon rate, right?
The only way it really works is if you have a lot of vacancies because if you're full, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When you're full, you're quicker to foreclose on people. One of the things I like about storage in Texas is if I'm Johnny on the spot, which means I don't have enough of that size units on that location, so I'm going to be Johnny on the spot. If you're late, you'll be hearing from me like the next day.
Right.
I can foreclose on a unit in 31 days from the minute they're late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good stuff. Mitch, what else do you want people to know? A question I haven't asked you, you know, anything about real estate, about financing, deal structure, evaluation, whatever you want.
When I'm looking for the mom and pop storages, which is where I started out, and where I'm still at the mom and pop, I'm just at the upper end of the mom and pop now in the rural. You know, that's where I've stayed rural and I'm not high rise or, you know, I'm doing my first climate control storages in my life right now. Because where I live, that's not what's in demand. But when I go to look at things, I really want to buy storages that are half empty. But then I want to quickly understand if I can change what that half empty is. And so I look for web presence. I call and see how they treat me or if they answer the phone or if they get back to me. And I start to have this assessment of why I believe they're half full and if I can change it. So if you go out to one of these mom and pops and they're half full and you ask them, what's the name of this facility? Because I don't see a sign. which is right away a problem. There is no sign. What's the name of this place? Mm-hmm. And then they tell you the name, and then you get on the internet and you type it in there, and they're nowhere to be found. It says, I pretty much know why they're half empty. They don't have a sign anywhere, and they have no presence on the internet. So I start, that's what I'm looking for in the mom and pop when I buy. Because mm-hmm. if you want to get like on Marcus Millichamp or whatever, and you want to look at storages, they'll be happy to sell you one at a 4% cap rate.
Right, right, right. And what are your cap rates typically on deals you do? Well, you're not always buying from scratch, so you got to fill them up. And that's
I'm going to buy them on a lesser cap rate, but also look to see if the rents are under market.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of units, and just the $10 a unit can change everything. You know what I mean? Like real easy. Cap rates, I don't like to look at anything under 10 or 12.
So. Wow, that's still phenomenal.
I don't buy Class A stuff. I buy Class B and C stuff, and I try to swing it around and get it to pick up some extra income or do something to improve it so that it makes more than it did when I bought it.
But yeah, absolutely. And is the extra income just strictly coming from rent increases, or is there any other kind of value add idea? Certainly you could put a vending machine on the property. That's probably not going to make you a bundle of money, but you know, anything else?
No, it's just late fees and overlocks. Last year I collected $68,000 in late fees.
Mm-hmm. Wow. On what gross though? On what gross revenue?
A little over $1 million.
Okay, so 6% on late fees. That's pretty good.
Well, late fees, lock cutting fees, charging to overlock, charge to auction, charge for all this stuff, you know.
Yeah, okay, got it. Okay, good. Mitch, give out your website. Tell people where they can find out more about you.
You can find me at 1000houses.com. That's 1000houses.com. That's where there I usually specialize in the owner finance strategy and owner financing. Walmart houses for Walmart people. My podcast is reinvestorsummit.com, reinvestorsummit.com. And I just started going YouTube. So reinvestorsummit.com/YouTube. And you can look at my ugly mug while you listen.
Fantastic, Mitch. Yeah, you're awesome. Keep up the good work. And thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.